A name, Lycurgus, began to be floated. It was agreed that he had been a Heraclid grandee, uncle to a Spartan king, no less, and possessed of the sternest temperament, high-principled and fair. Oracles believed the sage divine. A temple was raised in the great man's honour, and his purported reform programme increasingly located back in the mists of time, giving it, like the Heraclid bloodline, a pedigree as venerable as it was bogus. Revolution, as the Spartans were the first people in history to discover, could best be buttressed if it was transfigured into myth. Lycurgus was said to have been divine, and yet he had worn the aspect of a beast. He who brings into being the works of a wolf was the literal meaning of his name. No longer, under the constitution established by Lycurgus, were the Spartans to be counted as predators upon their own kind, but rather as hunters in a single deadly pack. Henceforward, even the very wealthy were to adopt a lifestyle that was as much as possible like that of the ordinary run of people. Merciless and universal discipline was to teach every Spartan, from the moment of his birth, that conformity was all. The poorer classes, initiated into the ranks of an elite and peerless army, gained a status they had hitherto been denied, and material security to boot. Hazy though the precise details are, it appears likely that one of the key policies of the Lycurgan reform programme had been the partitioning of much of Messenia into allotments for the poor. Not that any member of the master race ever farmed these grants in person. It was out of the question for a Spartan warrior to toil and sweat in a field. Learned scholars, curious about the name Helots that the Spartans gave their wretched underclass, derived it from Helos, a town in Lacedaemon, conquered in the very earliest days of their expansion. What had first been practised on one side of the Taygetos range was refined and perfected on the other. A whole population was reduced to serfdom. The Messenians, labouring like asses suffering under heavy loads, found themselves having to shoulder the full weight of Spartan greatness. And no sooner had the conquerors found themselves growing rich off their helots than they began to cast around for more. By the early 6th century BC, with the West successfully pacified, the focus of their ambitions was inevitably turning north. There, however, blocking the path of empire, loomed a menacing rival, Argos, a city less than 40 miles from the Lacedaemonian frontier, a power just as restless and arrogant as Sparta. But the Argives had not merely countered the first assault upon their territory by the Spartans' new citizen army, but annihilated it. Half a century later, the Spartans were still struggling to impose themselves on states even immediately over their frontier. The territory of Tegea, a city with the misfortune to lie midway between Argos and Sparta, was next. To the Spartans, in particular, the richness of Tegea's farmland was an intolerable provocation, and in the early years of the 6th century BC, looking to seize it for themselves and turn the Tegeans into helots, they unleashed a full-scale war of annexation. Again, their invasion was defeated. This delivered such a blow to the Spartan self-confidence that it forced an abrupt and decisive shift in their foreign policy. Employing their customary blend of low cunning and religiosity, they duly dispatched a delegation to Tegea under cover of a truce. News had reached them of a strange find in a blacksmith's yard, the spine of what appeared to be a monstrous skeleton. The prize was duly dug up, smuggled home, shown off, then reinterred. The skeleton, it was revealed, had belonged to none other than, a blast of trumpets, Agamemnon's son. An identification more calculated to infuriate the Argives could not, of course, have been imagined, as they claimed Agamemnon as their forebear. And yet the fanfare made over it by the Spartans had a far more calculated aim. The bones might have been stolen from Tegea, but Sparta, by enshrining them within her soil, was offering a public reassurance to others in the Peloponnese that she valued and respected their ancient traditions. To a Peloponnese long racked by rival hatreds, not to mention the menaces of Argos, Sparta offered the order of a protection racket, at least. Worse fates might be imagined. In 550 BC, Tegea entered into a league established and controlled by her fearsome neighbor. Other cities soon followed. Even as the Spartans promoted themselves as the guardians of their neighbor's mythic past, so they remained true to the ideals of the wolf pack, to the practice of terror and total war. The early defeats inflicted on their newly reformed army, far from denting their faith in the Lycurgan system, had only steeled them to perfect it.